It's one of my favorite games of all time because I could easily always jump back into it no matter how long it's been since I've last played it. It's such a great pick up and play action game.
This is why you should play No More Heroes.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Why You Should Play. Surprise, I am going to try to turn out a much faster cadence of episodes. Obviously, that relies upon me playing and completing games. I know I can hear many of you laughing and cackling right now at that concept, me completing games in pretty short succession, but I'm going to try to do my best. This podcast has really gotten me to hunker down and focus on playing a game and really absorbing it and appreciating it and beating it. And today's episode is a shining example of that, not only of playing and completing a couple of games, but games I never really thought I would ever play in my entire life. But that's the joy of this podcast. I go from not even knowing games really exist to really, really loving and enjoying them and wanting to talk about them with people that I love talking to. So that is going to be the case with this episode today. Of course, we are talking about No More Heroes, specifically No More Heroes 1 and 2, which was recommended for me to do by today's esteemed guest. He is a super fan of Crash Bandicoot and From Software Games. He is, I consider to be, a cinephile. He has been known to watch many a movie in his relatively short time on this earth. And I think he is well-cultured beyond his years. He is a great conversation, which I know will be reflected in this episode today. Please welcome the man we have come to affectionately call the Sam Decute. Sam, how are you doing today?
Moe. That's pretty good. Thank you. Yeah. pretty good. I mean, for the most part, I woke up today and I think something's caught up to me this weekend of tiredness. Mm-hmm. I feel a lot more tired than I usually do, but I'm very ecstatic to talk about these games today. How are you?
I'm doing well. And as kind of an aside, we were originally supposed to record yesterday, but I was outreached to do some social things, which is always very, very awkward in general. Many of us can empathize with that. I was like, well, I guess I should go and do a social obligation every now and then. So I did that. Yeah, thankfully, we were both pretty open. We were able to do this today. And so I'm very excited because, again, I never thought that I would be playing and enjoying games like the No More Heroes games. And I am really blessed to be able to talk about them with someone who is probably the biggest fan of these games that I know or I've ever spoken to. So now that we're both doing well, we kind of know what the episode is about. What have you currently been playing?
Well, you mentioned like delaying from yesterday, and that actually worked out for me because after 125 hours, I was finally able to finish the game you briefly mentioned on your last episode you did, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. It's great. It's a great follow-up sequel. Obviously, this game's been the talk of the town for weeks on end, and I finishing it, I was ready this weekend to wrap it up. I got home on Friday, and I was like, I'm finishing it this weekend. I've put in enough time. I know I can, like, put in a lot more time. Like, I could see people easily playing, like, up to 200 hours of this game. Or just, you know, this could be the only game they play this year kind of deal, where there's not only just so much content in the game, but there's just feels like limitless, almost it feels limitless, but the sandbox stuff in this game and what Nintendo's been able to pull off this time around and just innovating, like just the freedom to do whatever you want at all times. And obviously there's new mechanics they implemented to make you really feel like you have an endless wealth of content, but overall, great follow-up, better than the previous game. I adore Breath of the Wild, like probably most people that have played it. Now, fast forward all these years later, I'd say the sequel is relatively the same game. The world itself of Hyrule, again, just feels a lot more lived in. And they took a risk by going back to the same map again, but I think they pulled it off. I do have a few complaints, like I did with Breath of the Wild, and they were actually, a lot of them were the same as Breath of the Wild, but a lot of the new stuff that they innovated on here didn't really take away too much from my overall enjoyment of the game. And hell, if I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't have spent 120 hours in it. But it's pretty stellar.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And one thing that's has me really encouraged to continue playing it and seeing it all the way through after what I'm sure will be many, many hours, is I've heard the ending of like the main, whatever you want to call it, the main story is pretty epic.
It is.
So I'm excited to get to it. I haven't had it spoiled. So
it's a really fitting end. I'm going forward, I'm really hoping they do something. I know the producer of the series, whose name I'm blanking on right now.
Eiji Onuma.
Yeah, thank you. I know he said that the open world element is like a new staple they believe in going forward for the series, and I'm totally fine with that. Just given off what they've been able to do here with both of these games. But I really hope they do take a whole new approach to the open world next time. And I'm assuming, you know, it's probably not going to be another 5 years until we get like, there's going to be a new Switch probably. And like by the time there's another 3D Zelda game like this again, but I'm hoping next time they do pull off some more risks than this one. Not that this one didn't, but I'd like to see them really take it somewhere else.
Yeah, I would agree. I've even told people a few times on occasion that I would love them to do a smaller, more 2D. I think that the Link's Awakening remake that came out, I think in 2019. I mean, the job they did on that remake is just amazing. I'm still amazed. I mean, the frame rate at times is what it is. But yeah, I would love them to do like an interstitial Zelda as well. There's so much charm in those smaller scale 2D games.
I really connect with the 2D games a lot as well, just as much as the 3D ones. I don't see why not they couldn't do 2D ones in between these big ones, because it would just kind of like help the wait for those who are waiting for those, for these bigger games. But and also I think there's just, this is a long running series and there's like a plethora of Zelda games, like 30-year-old franchise now, obviously, but I still think they can go back to the 2D format and really innovate there still, if Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom are anything to go off of.
And I think it fits with the theme of the Switch as well, right? Like the Switch itself is literally a handheld and a traditional console hybrid. So, I mean, to sort of continue that theme with the games they're continuing to develop, I think would be really, really cool. And like I said, with the job they did on that 2D Link's Awakening remake, it would be really, really awesome. Even if it's just kind of giving the Link's Awakening treatment to another 2D game. Like, I don't think they would necessarily do it for Link to the Past, because I think that game's
perfect.
Just so revered. Yeah. That's argued. I mean, that's pretty much in a lot of people's top three pretty consistently at worst. But to get back to Tears of the Kingdom, I totally agree with your assessment that the world feels more lived in, and I like that. It makes the starting of the game so much more propulsive. It's not as desolate and barren from a surface level as Breath of the Wild is. Obviously, Breath of the Wild, you discover shrines and you discover things that fill out, but it's not really a spoiler. You start out in the sky, one of the sky islands to start Tears of the Kingdom, and then you drop down and there's a pretty sizable town or outpost full of people near you. So it's like right from the jump, you're kind of thrown in and you're like, okay, this may be the same overall topography, but there's a lot more going on this time around. And another aspect that I really like about Tears of the Kingdom is the sort of new abilities that you get. And to me, it harkens back to Nintendo's very, very origins, you know, over 100 years ago. Is a lot of people don't know this, but they were originally a toy manufacturer. And I think that what you're doing in Tears of the Kingdom is you are basically building toys, you know, your giant machines and mechanized vehicles and such. So I think it's so cool how it feels like they brought something.
It's come full circle.
Yeah, into the new century. They're like, we're going to do this. And obviously it's been said with Breath of the Wild that it harkened back to the original Zelda, where it's like you just come out of a cave and you have to explore the world and figure it out on your own and go. So yeah, I think in many ways that Tears of the Kingdom does feel like an evolution of Breath of the Wild. And I really can't wait to dive more into it. I think I have no idea how many hours I'm in so far. I want to say 10 or so, maybe 12. And I haven't even touched like the underground area. I've done one temple. And so I am perfectly content with just picking it up occasionally and doing a few shrines and maybe if I want to head towards another main quest. But
yeah, that's the nice.
Yeah, it's a special game.
It's a nice pick up and go game too. And I think that's, like you said, it kind of makes it extra special as well. It's
yeah. And the final point, because I know like we could gush about both games forever, but I think another thing that's cool in the broader sort of gaming ecosystem is it's cool to have another game that's sort of like a zeitgeist game, you know, similar to Elden Ring. Like I cited earlier, you're a massive FromSoft fan.
Of course.
These sort of games that really occupy a lot of the gaming's consciousness in a positive way. You know, it's not a negative. It's not like a huge workplace scandal. It's not a game failing, it is a true triumph of the medium and a real success story. And, you know, we've seen clips all over social media of the crazy things that people have constructed. And, you know, similar to Elden Ring, it's like, hey, what did you discover? You know, I discovered this over here. Oh, I've never even seen that. I didn't even know that existed. And it's really, really great. And I'm hoping some other games this year, I'm hoping Starfield will do that. I know I cited Starfield earlier in the previous episode, but I'm kind of excited for that game too. So maybe even Final Fantasy, you know, to some degree. But it's really cool to have zeitgeisty games like that in a positive sense. Anything else would probably pale in comparison, but has there been anything else that you've been playing that you would want to shout out?
Yeah, actually, I'll quickly shout out Fury, a game by the Game Bakers. Is that their...
I think so.
Yeah, I think that sounds like their developer name. That's a game that I've been meaning to play for many, many years, and just, last weekend, I was kind of like, all right, I've played a lot of Zelda, I need, like, a breather, anything short and sweet that can kind of just keep me occupied for a bit, and then I'll feel ready to go back and jump back into Hyrule and all that, and Fury was just staring at me there for the longest time, so I was like, you know what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, it's a very different game where, like, Zelda... It feels a lot more laid back, relaxed, and not a super sense of urgency or like really challenging combat. Fury is, there's no messing around. It's like pretty straightforward. And I think I briefly mentioned, but it's all killer, no filler. It's a straightforward game with like very simple premise. And it's how it goes about that premise is what makes it really special. Which for anyone listening, it's essentially a boss rush game, hack and slash, where you're trapped above a planet in a prison cell. Someone lets you free, and your goal is to essentially break out of this space prison. And there's a plot in the game, but it's kind of hard to describe because it doesn't sound very straightforward or normal. But really stellar action indie game. Like, the mechanics are pretty simple, but it's just how it's all implemented in each boss fight you encounter along the way that makes it really feel complex. And there was like not a single weak fight in that game. I always felt like there was a good sense of challenge, and every boss was every fight just kept upping the ante any way it could in its mechanics or the difficulty. Also, fantastic score. I recognize, mm-hmm. I think one of the song composers is someone that worked on Hotline Miami in the past, because I could tell based off the sound, but then I had to look up the person's name and I was like, okay, this guy worked on Hotline Miami, which is like one of my favorites. But yeah, really fantastic game.
Fury is one of those games I was a bit surprised to find out that you hadn't played before, because I'm like, that is a Sam DeCoo game, mm-hmm. without question. For those of you who aren't really familiar with it at all, it's an isometric perspective, right?
That
I
would consider that right.
Isometric. Yeah. And you mentioned the cinematic look, and I think the isometric aspect helps because you really get a wider view of the sort of battlefield or the terrain that you engage each boss. And I think it's, for the most part, I think it's giant, basically circular areas. And you mentioned the score as well, very synth heavy, obviously. And the combat almost does have that rhythm aspect to it. You know, it's kind of very bullet hell. You're going to be dashing and avoiding projectiles. It's very colorful as well, so it really matches the synth. So it really is almost at times like you're fighting to the beat of a synth score. Yeah, it's very tough as nails. I did hit a wall in that game really far back on Switch, but I think I got it for PlayStation recently, so I may try to fire it up again there. And I do want to finish it because that game may or may not be a candidate for
that would be a, for this podcast. That's a great game to discuss.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you said, it's all killer, no filler. There really isn't much. I don't think there's really any upgrades at all.
Nothing at all.
There's no skill tree. There's no upgrades. It's pretty much just you, your sword, your dashing.
It's you and your wits.
That's pretty much it. And like you said, the bosses. Yeah, the bosses test you in different ways. And there's, like I said, there's someone who frees you. There's your sort of companion, and there is a very surrealist aspect. It's like you're walking through a dream world almost, because each path between boss fights is it's pretty slow and deliberate. Like, you're walking along and this guy is commentating and talking to you. I think there's like a revenge element to it.
I kept
it as well. So,
calling his companion Frank from Donnie Darko. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I was thinking of, Frank. Yeah. Very, very similar. Probably very
definitely
directly inspired by that. So yeah, let's dive into it. I know we're gushing about games, and we're obviously going to gush about a couple of more here now. But before we dive into the games themselves, I wanted to kind of give some background on this madman nicknamed Suda 51 and Grasshopper Manufacturer. If you can give us a little bit of
kind of give us a little lore. Bit of
catch up on. Yeah, a little on this crazy man and his development team.
Yeah, not everyone listening to this will obviously... They probably heard him in passing because of me.
He's that guy that shouted out
Wario64. Yeah, so yeah, Wario64's profile picture is him upside... Yeah, that's Suda 51. Suda.
There you go. That's up probably 90% of people.
Goichi Suda is a writer, game designer, and director, and CEO... of Grasshopper Manufacturer, which was founded in 1999. Yeah, 1999, because it's their 25th. They're doing their 25th anniversary thing. It was like 98, 99 they were founded. And they're having, I'll probably mention this more towards the end, but they have something special coming up very soon. It's this week.
Yeah, I was just reminded
about
like, what are they cooking?
But yeah, he's I would say, like, well-revered in the games industry as probably... I would call him the games industry, like, underdog. A lot of people probably, when they think of game directors, they probably go to Hideo Kojima first, which is understandable. He's probably the most well-known and obviously most honored game director at this point. I'd say Hidetaka Miyazaki's getting to that level of fame, given their impact with Elden Ring and everything the last 10 to 15 years now. But Goichi Suda, or Suda 51, has been making games for a lot longer than most people probably have expected to as well. He's been making games before he founded Grasshopper and where we are now. Like, he got like in at a spot at a random game company and started as like a writer. And then eventually that company went under. And then him and a few other people, very, very small team of people, got together, founded Grasshopper, and they were just making very small visual novel text-based adventure games up until the mid-2000s, where they released Killer 7. That was their first game to be released in the West for the GameCube back in like 2005, and that was a part of the whole Capcom 5 game deal with Nintendo. And his games didn't really necessarily take off in back home in Japan, but they found a audience, a following in the West, and Killer 7 was that game. And then a couple of years later, the game that really sprung him and his company into the spotlight is one of the ones we're talking about today, and its sequel, which is No More Heroes. And basically up until now, he's got like a pretty long line of games at this point.
Yeah, he really does. I think your underdog label fits well, because I was like many others when I'm like, he's that guy that Wario64 on Twitter really likes and has in his profile picture and all that stuff. But then you go back, you know, I'm literally on the Grasshopper Manufacturer Wikipedia page right now. I'm like, oh, there's so many of these games, and I know there's been rumors that maybe like,
yeah, so there's Suda's talked about him and a old producer at Capcom back in the day that worked on the game have talked about essentially restoring all the cut content. So that game was supposed to tie in to his older games. It was supposed to tie into like the Silver Case games and Flower, Sun, and Rain, and all of this was supposed to be a part of this tangential universe of his. And then he's like, oh, it's my first game releasing in the West, so I can't really throw all this at the player, so I have to scale it back some. And yeah, him and I don't remember the person's name, but I think that person's left Capcom now, so I'm not sure about how they're going to go about ever. I'm sure he's probably on good terms with Capcom, and he's also worked with Shinji Mikami of Resident Evil fame, and the both of them also made another game after that. They made Shadows of the Damned together, but they've talked about restoring essentially like a lot of the cut content from the what they wanted to do originally, but that's something that could happen before he retires, so who knows when that might be.
Cool, yeah, and also another anecdote with Grasshopper is they were purchased by NetEase in October 2021, and I know you've mentioned this too, they've stated that they're obviously going to get a lot more funding, you know, because they're going to have deeper pockets from their parent company now, and the plan is for Grasshopper to do, I think,
so yeah,
their plan is to do three more games coming up, and the hope is with this upcoming announcement they've teased that they're going to announce.
They merged with another company at one point about, this could have been almost 10 years ago now. I think it was Gung-Ho Media, and they made Let It Die together, and that was kind of more of like the darker era of that studio where their releases were pretty quiet for a while, and they're kind of chasing the bag with that one. But they thankfully broke away from that. And yeah, the NetEase acquisition news was a little concerning at first after Let It Die and Gung-Ho, but he stated in multiple interviews that there's actual good things to come from this. And it's essentially just giving them, their games aren't going to be as, hopefully not as like budget restricted, because his most recent couple of titles were definitely, one of them in particular was felt a bit more budgety than the other.
Yeah, for sure. That's understandable. And I think from what NetEase line developers have mentioned, that they said that, hey, they've pretty much been able to do what they want. The obvious financials aside, but creatively, they've been very, very free, which for someone like Suda and Grasshopper, as we'll discuss with these two games, is really, really important to have that really sort of clear, specific vision for what someone wants from a game.
Yeah. He's mentioned in the past, and back when he worked on Shadows of the Damned, if anyone's familiar with Suda, they'll know and follow his work that Shadows of the Damned is a particular project of his that was completely, I guess, you know, like he almost had no say in by the time it was originally one thing, and then it went through he mentioned in an interview video a couple years ago that where he was out, it was like one of those career videos where he's outlining his career and talking about each individual game his company worked on over the years. He mentioned Shadows of the Damned went through like six different revisions before EA was able to agree with him on one. You could talk about that story all day, but
yeah, I'm sure those kinds of creative corporate clashing stories are a dime a dozen. But let's pivot to more positive, brighter things. So the games we're here to discuss are No More Heroes 1 and 2. The first game, No More Heroes, released in 2007, originally on the Nintendo Wii, and then the follow-up, No More Heroes 2, released in 2010, also on the Nintendo Wii. So the overall premise of these games is that you are a young man named Travis Touchdown, and if you think that name is ridiculous, then, well, boy, howdy, do you have a lot to look forward to in these games. So the premise is you have to work your way up through a series of assassins through, what is the name of this association? Is it the...
Yeah, the UAA, which I believe is United Assassins
Association.
Association.
And so you do so from your very small home base of a motel. I think the name of the motel is No More Heroes Motel, correct?
That's
the name of the title. And you pretty much operate pretty briefly out of that motel. You can pick the various katanas that you get that you can eventually purchase. So you select your katanas, you can select your outfits, you can save, you can view collectibles, I think, that you've collected throughout the game. And then you go out into the world, do some side activities, some jobs, some smaller combat encounters. But the main thrust of the game are these pretty insane series of boss encounters. So, Sam, was there anything else that you kind of wanted to state about the premise pretty succinctly and briefly without going too in depth
into the actual story content? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Travis, as he's mentioned, is, I don't want to call him an anti-hero, but he's like the absolute opposite of that, of the premise of a hero. And he is very much obsessed with just becoming the number one ranked assassin in the world. Mm-hmm. And also the katana we're speaking of is referred to as a beam katana. Yes. And it's essentially a ripoff lightsaber. Yes.
Yeah. It's funny. You're hesitant to call him an anti-hero because I think he's too immature and stupid to be like a genuine. Yes. He doesn't have like a guiding philosophy or ethos. He's just an insane, immature idiot, but it fits the tone of the game so well, which we'll go into in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think his the voice acting is very, very good. I don't know the voice actor's name offhand.
Robin Akin Downs, who plays Travis, is famously known for, He's Miller in MGS5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's Miller in MGS5, and I think he's the Prophet of Regret in Halo 2.
Oh.
I think I looked that up the other day and put that down in my notes here. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he's... yeah, fun fact, just about, since you mentioned the voice acting, so my brother pointed this out to me, that the... I think he noticed a casting director's name was familiar to him, and he looked it up, and it was... oddly enough, somebody that worked on the Metal Gear games and like casted the voice actors in those games. And that makes sense when I looked up everybody who was in the game, and a lot of them have been in Metal Gear games.
Yeah, we will further on in this episode, I think we will be making vague references to Metal Gear as well in other respects. I think you and I have mentioned it with the bosses are just, yeah, they're just ridiculous and over the top. You mentioned like the beam katana being like a not lightsaber and all these other... all the other aspects of the premise of the game. I think I wanted to sort of delve into the influences as well, because I think they're all over the place. I think this game, and you can probably attest in more detail, this game really is an extension of Suda himself. I mean, there's beam katanas, there's a bunch of wrestling professional wrestling references.
Yes.
You literally suplex people, which we'll talk about more. You perform wrestling moves, finishing on enemies. The bosses and the villains, there's a lot of pop culture references. There's, I think, some very direct references to Metal Gear villains. So it really is all over the place, and it really fits with the wacky, over-the-top tone of this game.
There's a great balance of tone in this particular game of his, where all the silly, wacky stuff you experience, you get to kind of contrast that with, like, what is a pretty violent game at points, yes, too, and the violence gets across, I think, too, like, despite how silly and ridiculous it all is, like, it does, some parts are, like, pretty brutal.
Yeah, there is, you know, given the whole Assassin's Guild, there's sort of, like, an honor amongst warriors at times with some of the boss battles, and even though, like, the some of the cinematics are insanely violent in, like, a very, like, a reference to the very over-the-top sort of comic booky way, like, you can actually envision these being comic book panels that are insanely violent with how the blood splatters so much and everything. Yeah, there is like a sort of code of honor. There's these really sort of subtle, serious moments where Travis, you know, may have different reactions to different assassins that he ends up dispatching. So these are two games that I enjoyed a lot more, just because I didn't know what was going to happen next in terms of the story or the bosses or the villains that you were going to come across, with, you know, how much I enjoyed the gameplay, for example, which we'll kind of dive right into now. So the gameplay, it's pretty much a hack and slash game for the combat. But I think what's cool is you have these finishers, which you perform on all the enemies. And we'll get more into this in the caveats, but there are finishers, and you can either do like a huge sword slash that's insanely violent. You can, you know, cut people in half diagonally or vertically, or cut their heads off and blood splatters all the same every time. Or you can perform wrestling move finishers on them. You can do like a suplex or a pile driver. It's very, like you said, is very much the way like a teenage boy would want to play a game. So, you know, you're the expert here. You take the lead and go off.
Of course. Very, I love action games in general. So like this game for like many years has been on my radar of like games to play. So when I finally got to it, it was like a moment of something clicking immediately upon just like doing the tutorial and doing the first stage and everything. I was like, this isn't I know these games have been criticized in the past where, and you know, it's not like the most perfect combat system, and it's an older game now that came out in late 2007 and on the Wii as well, so there's it's held up pretty well considering. But it's very straightforward in its approach, so that most players can actually just jump into it and not feel overwhelmed. Because I definitely get some people who don't probably often play action games. They get hit with, here's all these moves you have to remember. And then some of these moves are only going to work on certain enemies. No More Heroes kind of sits like in between like Bayonetta and Devil May Cry of combat systems, where it's somewhere just right center there, where it's fast, it's kinetic, you could like chain really great combos and stuff, and it's awesome, but it's not too complex to like really scare away a player. that might not be like too overly familiar with the genre. Honestly, it's like one of the better action games in general, just to recommend to somebody who's never really dipped their toe in to begin with, let alone dipping your toe into a Suda 51 game. Like, this game is, it's one of my favorite games of all time, because I could easily always jump back into it no matter how long it's been since I've last played it. It's such a great pick up and play action game. That's incredibly fun. Like, all those finishers you talked about, like between like cut, like whatever it was, like cutting someone in half or diagonally or whatever, the wrestling moves. It's all like incredibly satisfying and so much fun. And just a big old grin on my face playing these games.
Yeah, it really is. This sort of finishers really serve as an exclamation point for every enemy that you fight. And it is really satisfying. It's like a little micro dopamine hit every time. You can do a wrestling move on them, or you can like cut them in half based on the button presses. And this totally slipped my mind with how much I associate you with Suda and his games. How did you come across this madman in his games, and then specifically No More Heroes?
Yeah, I guess I should. Yeah,
that was an oversight on my end. Yeah. I was just so.
Yeah, no, that's me too. It goes back about before No More Heroes. My first introduction dates back to like 2013, where I bought Lollipop Chainsaw, which is another game of his. I really, it's not his most loved game, but I kind of love that game despite the sum of its parts. It's like, it's dated, and the combat in that game is not as good as this game. There's a remaster coming, but he's got nothing to do with it. And that game famously introduced me to him and James Gunn, who wrote the game. I bought that game, and you know, being a 13-year-old, the cover of that game was designed to target 13-year-old boys. So I bought it because it was like 10, 15 bucks. And I was like, hey, I can afford this with my paper route money. And my GameStop, or it was EB Games at the time, like they didn't really care at a certain point, like who was buying M-rated games. So they, and you know, I've been like, I was such a longtime customer there where they were like, yeah, it's whatever. I bought that actually, and I bought Metal Gear Rising the same day, because Metal Gear Rising was like dirt cheap as well. So I got like two of my favorite action games, and like two games like I just randomly bought based off of like how the price they were, and like the covers and what I read on the back of them. And yeah,
for those I'm gonna cut it real quick. For those who aren't familiar, Lollipop Chainsaw is you are a scantily clad blonde cheerleader with a chainsaw, and you are running around basically killing zombies with a chainsaw with your boyfriend's severed head on your hip. So like I said, this madman has his insane games, and so yeah, but please continue.
Oh yeah, no worries. Yeah, but if anyone's interested in Lollipop Chainsaw based off that description, there is a remaster, or they've been labeling it as a remake, but I think it's more of a remaster. Like, I think they're describing it as a remake the same way they were describing the Destroy All Humans remakes are, where it's like, oh, it's a remaster with just extra pretty graphics.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be something more like that. I don't like think it's like it's not from the ground up. Yeah,
they've been saying they're going to be pretty faithful, we'll see in the end product.
Yeah, we'll see the end product, and we might be, who knows if we'll hear about that anytime soon, but that's something to look out for in case that's something, because the only other way to play it is either you emulate it, or you go and pay, you still have your Xbox 360 or PS3 like I do and can play the game. And the prices for the game can be a little, they kind of fluctuate. They're not super expensive, but you know, you're paying at least like probably $30-$40 at least.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine the price will probably go down when the remaster becomes more clear, but who knows. So
who knows,
off of Lollipop Chainsaw, do you remember the sort of chain of events that led you to No More Heroes?
Oh yeah, it was always like on the back of my mind to like play more of his games for so many years, and it wasn't until they ported No More Heroes to Switch, because a few years ago, back during COVID, I was ready to, like, you know, I was ready to, I had time to kill because we were all locked indoors, and I was like, I'm ready to go buy, like, I bought a Wii U specifically to buy a copy of the No More Heroes games to play on my Wii U and like get the Wiimote and everything. And I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna do it. Like, what else am I gonna do right now? And then there was a Nintendo Direct where they showed off No More Heroes 3, and I was like, this looks awesome. And then they're like, Sylvia makes a joke in the trailer, like, she's like, oh, wouldn't it be really cool to play those first two games, huh? And then they like cut in with you know, like a surprise shadow drop of the first two, which was really cool. And then I got to play them on Switch following that. So that's basically how I got to it took quite a while to get there, but I got there.
That's cool how much you took to those games. And you said earlier how much you're a fan of action games. And that's really the sort of 3D action games in general are ones that I associate with you. I was like, oh, that's a Sam game for sure. Like I said, with Fury, and I know you've played. So I know I watched your Shadows of the Damned stream, and that game is just absolutely ridiculous. Obviously, yes. It had its frustrating moments, but yeah, that game is ridiculous. I even like, I'm looking back, I'm shocked EA partnered to make that. And granted, I'm sure it was not Suda's true original vision, obviously, but it was still pretty damn ridiculous.
It's, I still like all of his games that I've played, except for like Let It Die, which his name is on that game, but it's not really like you know, that's a free to play something to just kind of play like an hour or two a day. And except for that game, like, I've enjoyed the vast majority of the most popular known titles that he's worked on. There's some deep cut stuff I haven't gotten my hands on, but I've enjoyed pretty much everything he's made, some better than others.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad I got that in. And again, for the listening audience, that I forgot to put the whole, I know, because I've done it for the last two episodes, I forgot to include the sort of what was your origin story with it and how did you discover it. So I'm glad I still remember to get it in. That's always, when we're talking about this podcast and it being, you know, evangelizing and being optimistic and encouraging people to play games, I think it's cool to kind of have that personal story about how did you discover it. I definitely wanted to make sure to get that part in. So back to the gameplay and sort of the overall structure of the game, I really wanted to dive into the side activities that you'll have to do throughout both games. And as I said earlier, there's sort of two pillars of both games. One is the really over-the-top boss fights, and the other one is the side activities that you do. And it's pretty goofy, funny stuff. It's almost like I don't want to call it a job system, but like in the first game, you're going to be like mowing a lawn, you're going to be picking up coconuts, I think you're going to be retrieving cats, you're going to be doing all kinds of zany stuff.
You collect trash. Yeah, you collect trash. There's the scorpion game later.
Oh yeah, yeah, the scorpion game where if like
pick a poison.
Yeah, scorpions. If you get stung by one, you got to run back to the foreman guy who's overseeing you and get medicine,
an antidote.
Yeah, antidote. Yeah. And it's all in the first game. They're all done in that sort of the same sort of 3D traditional 3D perspective as the combat and such. But what I really loved about the second game, I don't know if this is just more budget or this is just a different way that they wanted to approach it, it's actually more of a retro style sort of side scroller where you are literally doing mini games.
I knew you'd dig those.
Yeah, yeah, that was really cool. I did, so unexpected. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. There's a pipe game. I mean, you have to like organize pipes. That's like taps into my it's a little bit of brain rot there. It's like, okay, I gotta organize the pipes, and you know, I can either choose to do as many pipes as I can and then maybe risk time running out, or I can have as much time left on the clock and do the fewest number of pipes that I can to get from one end to the other, is an example. There's another one where you are vacuuming up bugs. So you have to do that as well. It's just such an inventive approach. You know, I do have some quibbles, which I'll get into later on, about the job system in the first game. But yeah, it's a really good change of pace from just being a straight boss rush game. It's like you're actually going out and doing things in the world, and you're obviously going to run into some more zany characters. And you know, another example is you're just standing there filling up cars at a gas station. Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah,
one.
that one's cool too. And in the first game, you ride around on your giant motorcycle, which I think is an Akira reference. It's just definitely this insanely over the top motorcycle. Whereas in the second game, you basically just select the points on the map. You're not free traveling. Routes.
That would be one of my caveats, yes, with the game, yeah, by the way. I'll mention.
We'll for sure get into that as well. So yeah, were there any? You can, again, you go ahead and take the wheel and go off about the.
No, yeah, centers. I love. One of the many things I love and adore about this, particularly the first game, is like there's these great stages where you fight through swarms of enemies, and then it leads up to these very, I would call them very cinematic and very really over the top and exciting action boss fights that thankfully in between those, there's like a great flow of that side content where, yeah, and there's even, we were talking about these funny side jobs. There's also just these assassin side gigs where you do get to kind of get like a lot of the mileage out of the combat system, which is like you go and do these like hits where they tell you like kill all these enemies in a certain amount of time. Like your standard action game side challenges, they're, you know, they're in Bayonetta, they have this style of side objective where you can just take a minute and do these things. And in this game, it's a lot more different where you do have these very funny, silly side gigs, but you also have the assassin side gigs as well. So there's like a really great, healthy variety of this stuff in the game's open world. And the open world itself, if you look at it at face value, yeah, it doesn't look great. And even for 2007, we had a, you know, like GTA 4 was out around that time, and probably the Assassin's Creed series was just taking off. So like open world was still, other than GTA, games were only just starting to adopt to this style. And I do like Suda's approach to it, because there is a lot of character to Santa Destroy because of these side gigs and this stuff you wouldn't just typically throw into not only an action game, but a game in general. It really makes his games really charming and funny and really entertaining.
Yeah, there is a lot of energy to it. Like I said, it's another aspect of the game that I think really is right out of a comic book, which I think is definitely one of Suda's influences as well. To continue on with the theme of how ridiculous these games are, the city is called Santa Destroy. So again, like it's
yeah,
you know, we're not being subtle here. And yeah, the little sort of minor cast of characters that you run across is funny. There's the one fitness guy in the first game. He's basically
like Thunder Ryu.
Yeah, he's a sort of creepy voyeur where he's like, oh, you need to
take off your pants.
Yeah, take off your pants. Yeah, it's very, and he's just sitting there in like an armchair, and it's wild. What other, was there anything else sort of about like the gameplay and overall structure of the game that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah,
I wanted to mention real quick. You mentioned the sort of side hit jobs. You mentioned the combat as well. Those are really good practice.
Yeah.
For combat. Whereas if you're feeling like, hey, the only combat I'm doing is basically the minor enemies to build up to the bosses. Well, there's a lot of practice in those side hit jobs. And I think the first time you do an actual side job, the little side character gives you like a sort of assassination mission to follow up and do,
yes,
I believe. So there's a lot of incentive if you sort of follow up, follow through on those side jobs where, and there's a lot of them in the first game too. I want to say there's like a dozen or so.
I think there's more than a dozen. Maybe
15?
There's like somewhere between, there's probably about 30 of them.
Is there 30 different ones?
I think I could be wrong.
Wow. I think it was that many. I probably just focused on like four or five of them to do.
Because you, you unlock more of them as you progress through the game story and stuff. So,
wow, I didn't realize there was that many. Yeah, you could be right. I'm imagining how they appear on the screen. But I digress. What was the other aspect that you wanted to highlight?
Oh, I think just overall, like between the gameplay and the overworld and stuff like that, there's not really another action game quite like this, and that's why I really love that stuff. You know, it's humorous and it's charming, but it does really stand out as to why I love this game and Suda's games in general, which he only does this kind of stuff in his games that no one else really does, which is like adding a lawn mowing side job, like mini game, or the filling up the gas tanks or the coconuts. And some of the characters you meet as well, like Thunder Ryu or Naomi, who upgrades your beam katana, who's a very dressed a certain way.
Yeah, we will.
A lot of the women in his games.
We will address that later on. She kind of mocks him too. She's like, oh, you're an otaku.
Yeah, she's just like, she's like, she doesn't like, she sees Travis and she's not happy to see him.
No, she's just like an annoying younger brother or something. Yeah. It really is wild. And yeah, I'm trying to think of what other aspects would I want to highlight without like getting into too much in depth or the caveats.
To definitely highlight about this first game is that even though there's like a sense of repetition in the game, they do every stage that you do in the game, every assassin boss fight, there's always a fun gimmick in almost every fight to really get that mileage out of the combat system, and also for you to think strategically, which is kind of lost in the sequel, and I'll touch on that later, where I think there's always like fun new gimmicks in every single stage that you do in this game, and literally up until the last like final fight in this first game, which is like is insane. It's hilariously insane.
Yeah, it really is.
It really is. Like the insanity just, you know, the ante just keeps getting raised every single boss fight you do, and I love it.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed 2 as well, and there's obviously a lot of structural similarities. I think 2 has some, like I said, I think it has some quality of life stuff that is good, and certainly some memorable boss fights. I think we both had quibbles with it, but I remember starting 2 and being like, oh, this is really awesome. This is just like a what I thought is a sort of slightly glossed up version of the first game. I was kind of felt like I was back home again and starting a new adventure with this character. And something else I did want to highlight, because she is a constant throughout the game, is Sylvia. And we talked about how much Travis is an immature idiot, and she just plays this guy as a poor sap this whole time. He is so gullible and stupid. I think you've called him, I don't know on this podcast, but you've definitely called him a lovable idiot. Like
he's a lovable idiot, sociopath, loser.
Yeah.
It's a pretty perfect way to describe him.
And she just plays him for a fiddle. I mean, she's an attractive blonde with a French accent. I mean, like, what, you know, what middle-aged 20s guy wouldn't fall for that? But yeah, she is a constant throughout the game, and by the end of the second game, I really, really liked her. Again, I don't want to spoil, but yeah, it was very, very satisfying how there's more to her than just sort of a Suda's take on a maybe a femme fatale sort of character.
I guess, yeah, since we're touching on characters overall, like, yeah. I do love every single boss fight and the banter between Travis and every assassin that he opposes and meet. They're always so much fun, whether it's like the first person you encounter at the very beginning of the game, Death Metal. They have like a really, yeah. That's where they kind of exchange philosophies very early on, and there is this there is that like undertone in the game that obviously the ridiculousness shines through, but you can kind of read in between the lines of each fight and kind of understand that there's something a little darker brewing. But yeah, like his banter between that particular character and then even moving forward, just entertaining banter where it's clearly him opposing another person that's kind of like him, or just like someone that's just as immature as him, or someone that's the complete opposite of him, and kind of you get this like exchange of philosophies, and it's always really great. And and in later sequels, speaking of like the wrestling element in the gameplay, one of the later sequels in No More Heroes 3, they really play up the wrestling dialogue. Like, instead of this like exchanging of philosophies, they really just kind of, Suda really played up this level of theatrical acting you'd see in like a pro wrestling event you'd watch or you would attend. It's really entertaining. And I love that Suda is not afraid as a writer in his games just to like pin himself in his games in a way that doesn't, it's never like tenuous or anything at all. He's like, yeah. He's incredibly self-aware about the whole thing. And he's probably, I prefer his brand of self-awareness and meta humor more so than like a lot of other either game devs or people in general. His style of writing, I definitely connect with more than other people's in games.
That's very wise. Just before you said it, I was thinking it's not done in a pretentious way. Mm-hmm. And I think you really have to do that. And what I applaud is with these two games, he really just leans into it all the way, from the characters to the dialogue to the enemies and the villains. I know you're probably like me, where it's like, I want to say more about the bosses and the villains, but I don't want to spoil them for people at all. Like, he clearly leans into it. And like you said, he doesn't take himself seriously at all, which is why it really does work. He puts all this stuff in his games and he readily acknowledges that it's all just absolutely ridiculous, and you cannot really take 95%+ of it all that seriously at all. It really is like a teenage boy made a 3D action game, and this is the result of it. And it is like the full concentrated 99% pure version of that vision, and it just shines through in both games. And so, was there anything else that you wanted to highlight? I know I this happens in every episode, and I suspect it will keep happening, where it's like we want to talk more, but it would be
I guess like to maybe just cap off No More Heroes 1 and maybe just dive more into 2. You summed it up pretty perfectly, but that game, it's one of my all-time favorites because of its ending as well, because it really rides home a lot of the themes and symbolism and subtext that Suda's kind of going for in that game. And again, it's like, I like a lot of the films and media I really love and consume are these films that are very layered and, you know, probably very, you know, a lot more serious than this game, but they're layered. Like there's something I can revisit and get something out of every time. And there's just so much to pick apart and discuss with many other people and see what they can kind of take away with their own interpretation. But I really love this game in particular because it fully believes in its ridiculousness and goes with it. And you don't have to enjoy it primarily because like there is subtext or anything. It's like, no, you can just enjoy this as like the fun action romp that it is. If you just think it's a fun, entertaining ride and that's all you get out of it, that's perfectly okay. I think that's how most people enjoy this game and a lot of Suda's games, but there's a lot more I get out of it too, besides that, with like the characters and the interactions and especially that ending, which I would definitely love to talk about, but obviously will not spoil because I don't want to rob people of getting that experience. But I will quickly warn anyone that does play this game for the first time, if you want to see everything in the ending, you will have to get all the beam katanas from the shop. And I did not warn Bill here about that before our before he played it, because he did not get to see a chunk of the ending. Go for it.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, what kind of idiot would do that? You know, what kind of idiot would not get all the way? And it's part of the caveat I'll go into with sort of an issue I had with one. Yeah, the ending is, you know, I did the classic YouTube strat of going online and watching it. And yeah, it is worth it. It is really ridiculous.
That ending solidifies it as like one of my favorite games of all time. And it's funny because, and I'll tell you about this after we're done recording, but Suda had a different idea in mind that was like pretty conclusive of an ending and not that one. Something like actually like radically different. So I'm really glad he actually went with this one because it really rides home the themes and a lot of the things I love about this game. And it's also maybe the funniest ending in video games to me of all time. Like it cracks me up. It cracks me up because it's what you said earlier, where it fully embraces everything. It embraces all of its tropes and stuff. It's so good. And I'll leave it there on that. So I definitely wanted to get that warning out there just because not everyone I know is going to play games the same way I do, where they are kind of like it's very easy to miss getting all those beam katanas. Like you just be like, oh, I this beam katana I'm using right now is perfectly fine. So you don't go back to Naomi's shop and get all the other ones or upgrade anything. So it happens.
And I do like that secret ending is very much a follow up to the final boss fight. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it is a good mix of, just insanely hilarious, but there also is actual story substance to it as well. And it's just ridiculous as well. The final,
it's so good.
The final cutscene. Yeah, it really is good. I kind of almost watching it did make me kind of annoyed that I didn't know about. No, it wasn't your fault. I mean, it's just a thing in games. And you know, there's other games that do that where it's like, oh, you have to do this sort of collectible to get the secret ending. And I should have gotten the final beam katana as well. I think I got all of them in the second game. So,
okay, yeah.
Speaking of the second game, we don't need to spend too much time on it because, I mean, there's so many, like, overall structural similarities.
There's a lot of similarities, but the game, without spoiling the end of the first game, the second game does take place, like, a bit of time. I think is it a few years after?
I think it's 3 or 5.
Okay, that sounds about right, because it takes place after the first, like that much time after the first game, and Travis is back, and it's the same goal of rising the ranks of becoming the number one assassin again, because he left and now he's back, and they're pretty straightforward about it from the beginning. I just remembered what he's actually trying to do in that second game as opposed to the first.
What I appreciate about the second one, I know you have your issues and I know you've said that among mm-hmm. Suda's fans, you think that the game is overhated, which I think from what you said, I would agree. It is very much a sequel. It definitely feels like the stakes are being raised. I do like that there is more character work going on, is what I will say without spoiling. I know we're like dancing around this right now. But and I love the beginning of the game too, for reasons which I will not go into. You fight a specific boss in the sort of tutorial thing that I just cracked up.
I love that laughing. Tutorial.
It's so funny. It is so good. I was like typing in all caps, like, I can't believe they're doing this right now. It is really, really good. It's there's a sense of urgency with the game. A lot of things happen with the plot. I was like, all right, I am genuinely intrigued to where this is going, aside from, you know, the ridiculousness of the universe overall. And without going into spoilers, I found the ending kind of touching, honestly. I was like pretty surprised. I was like, all right. And I'll discuss it off camera with you. The ending, if it's if you're thinking about what I'm referring to, yeah. It reminded me of a specific movie, which was, it's not a movie I ever expected I would think of when talking about this game. But yeah, it was sort of touching in a way. I was pretty surprised. And of course, the ending of 2 is just ridiculous. It's insane.
It's just
It's insane. It's like, I can't believe this is happening right now. But No More Heroes 2 takes more home run cuts. Not all of them really land. I think the biggest issue I have with 2, and this is sort of a caveats thing, probably a natural segue into caveats, is that there's some gameplay segments that are kind of annoying in 2. Things that they attempt to do that don't really work for this type of game. And I felt some of the later bosses in 2, the buildup to them was just too long. I was like, man, this is getting really, really long.
I agree with you.
But yeah, that kind of sums up my thoughts on 2. I still think it's a really fun game, but just with everything that happens in the story, and there's a lot of bosses that are very good. I do actually kind of like that it is shorter, because I think if it was overall longer, I would definitely dislike the game more. But I do respect that they did take more chances with the sequel in many, many respects. And yeah, I think that's kind of sums up my thoughts with 2. I know we've mostly spoken about both games in general with the gameplay and side jobs and stuff, but was there anything that you kind of wanted to speak to 2 about, obviously without
I'll probably sound very negative right now, because I do have quite a few issues with the sequel, but there are good highlights. And again, yeah, like, over the hate for this game is a bit much. Like, it's still like a fun, wacky ride. And it's worth noting, like, Suda was busy working on like 2 different projects at this time. So he's credited as a executive director or creative director. He's talked about how he wishes he was more involved with this sequel. And literally, this game came out like a year before Shadows of the Damned. So he was busy being reamed by EA. And he was also working on one of the Fatal Frame games. His company got involved working on one of those games at one point. But the sequels, it's more or less more of the same, and it just feels like there's quite a few things. It's hard not to spoil, but there's just things they retcon from the first game in the story, and then they also contradict some of the, I guess, themes of the original game, where Travis is more revered as like a hero this time around, or like a legend. And to an extent, it's kind of understandable, but he's also, the arc he goes on in the first game is a lot more interesting to me than this one, where, and there's points, like, there are points in this game's story where it does show there is something there. And there's like a really great scene towards the latter, probably like closer to the end of this game, where, wow, like, I really wish I got more of this, because this is what I was expecting the sequel to kind of be. But it's more or less just No More Heroes 1 again, where the boss fights in this are just as ridiculous, if not more ridiculous, than the first game. It kind of just has that sequel problem to me, where it does lack some of the elements that make the first game special, the open world and stuff. And I get it. I know it's funny too, because this sequel, I think, reviewed better on Metacritic than the first one did.
I think they're both roughly the same. I think they're like low 80s.
Yeah, they're in the 80s. Overall, I think they originally had bigger plans for this game, but they definitely scaled it back just because they were busy handling multiple projects. But I'm glad it's short. Like, I've only played it the one time. It is a fun, short sequel. And the combat to me this time around, it's a bit too rigid. It definitely doesn't feel as snappy and fast as the original games. But it does make up for that, because there are multiple beam katanas, and not just like multiple beam katanas like the first game, where the beam katanas have better damage, actual different play styles of beam katanas that you can actually switch on the fly in the mission, which is really cool. Like, each level, There's like a big beam katana that you swing around like a hammer or bat, and it's slow, but if you can time it right, you can hit enemies, like those mobs of enemies, down pretty quickly. And there's also like a dual, I use that one the most from my memory, the two beam katanas, sort of. I don't remember what the other one was, but I know there's four. But I just remember sticking to the dual ones because it was a lot of fun to quickly hack and slash, slice around pretty quickly. The combat to me is a little worse just because it feels really rigid. I really like the art style in this game. I still prefer the first game's look. I do like the second game's. It's funny because each No More Heroes games, you could tell they're a No More Heroes game, but they all have different art styles. And I think that's another reason why that makes the series so special, is that each game does look distinctly different than the other. And yeah, and there are some boss fight highlights in this one. And I think that last final fight that you're talking about, it is really funny and entertaining, but I do think it's pretty underwhelming compared to the first game's ending, just because it's one of those boss fights that I usually have. There's a part of the boss fight, I should say, that's like, it's kind of an issue of mine in certain action, like it's an action game trope at this point, just how it's designed, that I'm not a fan of, and I won't spoil why. But overall, like, good sequel, it just kind of loses a lot of that charm and what makes the first game kind of special. But still, like, as a sequel, still pretty good. I'd still recommend it. I'll play it again at some point. And it's got a killer soundtrack. I would feel like a fool if I did not mention the amazing music. Not only in the first game's got a great soundtrack, but the second game in particular has Akira Yamaoka, and I don't want to leave the other person's name out, so I'm getting that up right now. But Akira Yamaoka, obviously of Silent Hill fame, was one of the music composers on this sequel. Okay, the other person was Taku Yoshioka. You can, if anyone listens to this and has an aneurysm because I mispronounced it, then yeah, I'm sorry.
Millions of weebs
cried out in pain, but amazing, amazing soundtrack. Like, if you love, I kind of describe Suda's games as just like they have like a very punk energy and aesthetic to it, and the music mm-hmm. very much matches that aesthetic and energy.
It's funny, I forgot to highlight the music in two as well. I mean, I sent a little snippet to you, but the intro music that I'm going to use is the overworld music for the second game. It's just the overworld where you go and select points that you want to go to, and I'm like, this goes so much harder than it has any right to.
Yeah, any right to.
Like the man, yeah, it's that old man playing on piano on fire meme. I was like, oh, don't worry about it. It's just overworld music. And this dude just pops off, man. Yeah, it goes really hard. And I'm glad that you mentioned when you started talking about two, is that Suda wasn't necessarily as directly involved. And I think you can definitely tell, because like I said, there's a lot of different directions that this game took. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, there was maybe some tug of war internally where maybe Suda wasn't around as much and there was different sort of perspectives and priorities.
Yeah, it seems
higher ups involved with the project. I mean, like you said, overall, mm-hmm. that it's a good game. I would say maybe even very good, but there's definitely sort of an identity crisis at times with the game and sort of the combat and counters that you go through in the boss fights, etc.
Yeah, I want to mention another caveat that you mentioned, there's just too many enemies in some sections of the yes. game. I think that's to account for that the game is really short, and they also remove the open world element and all that stuff. And mm-hmm. yeah, that would be an issue of mine, because one particular sequence and level in the game is like outside that mall where you're how long was that? That's like 10. I think that whole part there where you're basically, to draw an image for the audience, you're outside the entrance of what is like, I think, a mall, and all these vans show up. And you're thinking, oh, okay, you're going to cut through these guys and then go into this building. You are there for a good 10, maybe 15 minutes, it feels like, of just this consistent, more vans show up of enemies, mobs of both your typical... That's another thing. This game added like big tanky enemies, which I was also not a fan
yes.
of.
Yes.
So these big dudes that you have to fight that take a lot more hits. And it definitely did not help the flow of the combat in this game, where you could have not only multiple standard enemies with swords coming at you and enemies with guns, but you have these big tanky dudes and there's multiple of them. And then you get overwhelmed and you're just mashing and swinging the Joy-Cons around for God knows how long. And when you get knocked down, it can be very, very annoying.
Yeah, for sure. And again, in the spirit of this podcast, that's not a consistent thing. I would say that's maybe one or two lead ups to boss battles that I had an issue. And that one you were talking about, I was running around. I'm like, is there a trigger I'm supposed to?
I thought the same thing.
And it was just, it's just something like that where it's like, man, they didn't quite have the consistent development vision for this, whether someone just didn't QA it or someone added in a an extra few spawns of enemies. I was just like, my God, what is this? But yeah, it's definitely, and again, we don't want to be overly negative. Again, that's a caveat. I mean, the caveats here kind of, they tend to lean more towards two's side than the original. But just out of curiosity, as an aside, I went on the authoritative website called Metacritic.
Ooh.
You know, the unimpeachable authority on video game opinions. Do you want to do a little quick, put you on the spot? Don't look it up. Okay. What do you think the meta score is and the user score for both games on Wii?
So for, I'll go with critic scores first. I'll say 84 for the first game and 85 for the second game. I feel like I'm a point higher for both, but that sounds right in my mind.
You are.
Oh,
The original was 83 Metascore, and the sequel was 84.
Oh!
You were so close.
Oh, damn.
Okay, now guess the user score.
Oh, user score? Ooh, okay, this was... User scores are the worst, because those ones are harder to actually guess.
Gamers are very often upset.
They are often upset.
There is another attribute of gamers, which we will touch on in a little bit, with that they are always in this state of mind. But I digress. Go ahead.
I'll say 8.4 for the first game, and I'll say 7.7 for the second game.
See, this is going to shock you.
Oh, no.
No More Heroes 1, user score is 8.5.
Okay.
On Wii. No More Heroes 2, user score is 8.8.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I could see that. Okay.
Which, that surprised me. I'm like, oh, wow. So, again, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know what the reason, maybe, who knows? Again, I think there is a little bit more of the, there's a little bit of the production value stuff. I think the music is a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think there maybe is a little bit more story and characters to it. Again, I don't want to delve into spoilers, but there's more going on, I think, into which maybe resonated with people more.
I think a part of it is like I'd say No More Heroes overall is Suda's most well-known, the thing he's most well-known for. And I do think there's more, most people that have probably played these No More Heroes games are probably not also big Suda fans like myself or other people that follow his body of work. I do think it's probably people that just casually enjoy the wacky Japanese action game from time to time. That's probably it. I've definitely seen a lot of people that do like, it's not like a super outrageous general opinion to like two more than one, but probably among more hardcore Suda fans that they might be like, oh, you like two more than one.
Judging.
Yeah.
So, as a quick follow-up, so the Switch reviews, they both have 82 Metascore. The user score for the original is 8.1, and for the second one on Switch is 8.0. So I think that's maybe a little bit more in line with what you've been attesting to for the Suda fan. I mean, it's basically the same. But yeah, I think we've really covered really a lot of the good aspects of both games, again, without spoiling. So I think we've touched on caveats a little bit. But so the first caveat that I want to get into is kind of a positive, is you really should play both games with motion controls. We've kind of alluded to it, and I will say this. One of my hesitations with both of these games is I am very, very iffy about motion controls. But when I think this game is actually, aside from the obvious, like the Wii Sports and the other very motion control dependent games, I think this is a good one where if you want to play what is more commonly recognized for video games, you know, a third person action game, I think this is a really good start for motion controls because, as I said earlier, the exclamation points when you're finishing off a boss with a slashing move or a wrestling move, that is where the motion controls come in. You're not going to be swinging every single hit of the sword for combat. You know, you still have the standard button presses to swing your sword, but the motion controls really work as an exclamation point. And like I said, they really work as like a dopamine hit, I think. So where it's like, okay, I defeated this enemy, I get to do a motion control sort of celebration, you know, where it's moving both arms up in the air, moving them to the side, or moving one arm up in the air and one arm to the side. And it's really, really satisfying to either cut someone's head off or cut them in half or cut them diagonally or perform a pile driver or a suplex on them. And do you agree?
I agree. No, yeah, I'm the I will preach about playing these games with motion controls. Not that playing it with a controller is bad. I've done a playthrough playing the first game with the Pro Controller, and I was like, yeah, it's perfectly fine, but I feel like you miss out on that dopamine hit and the charm of the game if you don't use... Because I believe the Joy-Cons, there's some motion control stuff with the mini games, and I think you miss out on the charm of that if you don't use the Joy-Cons. And yeah, the Joy-Cons are perfectly fit for this kind of game where you're not swinging them around every second, and it's not a workout.
Yeah, you're not doing Beat Saber. Yeah. And for the record, I played both games on Switch, and I bought them both physically because, you know, that's the Giga Chad I am. So
yeah, I think you could.
They're affordable.
They're affordable easily. If anyone that does get them physically, I think in the States you can get them from Best Buy like you did.
They're, I think they're pretty regularly on sale. Really shouldn't need to pay more than, I would say, $40, very, very tops. I think I got both for $30, $25.
That's a good deal,
like
yeah.
In fact, my dear guest here reminded me that I actually did buy them. I forgot. And then I have No More Heroes 3 on PlayStation, which we'll get to that a little bit later on in the episode. But yeah, please play this game with motion controls. Can you? I'm pretty sure you can turn them off just in the middle of the game if you really find
a problem with them. Yeah. I can't really see why anyone would find a problem with them.
You could
just switch over to the Pro Controller, or probably use that like that little clip thing that comes with the Switch Joy-Cons to just turn it into a controller and play it that way. Or because the Switch versions are the, I think, just agreed upon definitive version, because A, they run at 60 FPS, and these ports, I don't remember the studio that did these ports for Switch because it wasn't Grasshopper. They did a really good job porting these games, and, you know, I'm not going to tell you to go buy a Wii and go track down the copies of these games to play them that way. Yeah, like, no. We have a newer version. They are on Steam, but I've heard mixed results from those ports. Apparently, they're waiting on Marvelous, the publisher, to release a patch for those ports, because I guess there just seems to be... the right amount of issues for people to be upset about, and I understand that. I haven't played the PC ports for myself, but I will just recommend, based on what I've seen and who I follow online, that just avoid those if you can. If you own a Switch, like, they're dirt cheap digitally if you don't want to buy them, track them down physically. But there is a, I will quickly just mention, there is a famous PS3 port that came out sometime around No More Heroes 2 came out. I played a bit of the PS3 port finally just like last weekend, and just to get a bit in and see what the differences are. Wasn't, again, another port not made by Grasshopper. I don't remember the company that made it now, but the person that published it is someone quite famous. The greatest port masters of the universe, Konami, published this PS3 port, and whatever this studio did, Suda didn't like, and I also would not recommend this port based on performance. It's not the worst 30 FPS, but it does dip. And there's also, I think the big thing for me is the art style change. The art style looks, I don't know how to describe it, but it looks kind of gross.
didn't you stream the PS3 version?
No, so I streamed the Switch versions, and
okay.
At one point, I was going to stream the PS3 version, but I just never got around to it. PS3 version has a... The company that ported the first game tried to make it look more like the second game, and you shouldn't have done that when you're not...
Oh, yeah, it's one of those.
Also, they definitely tried to make it look more like the second game, because when you save in these games, by the way, Travis sits on a toilet, and that's where you save the game, is when he's on the crapper. So at random points after you beat a boss, you can fall asleep on the toilet in this PS3 version, and then you get transported into a dream boss stage, and the bosses in those stages, in the dream stages, are ones from No More Heroes 2. I'm not sure why they added that in here, but it does not work at all.
That's so weird.
That is one of the many strange changes that is in this port. There's also other mini games they added. There's like one where you're on the beach and you're holding flags, like doing signs for the boats out in the distance. I don't know why that was added in. That was one of the mini games I noticed that was new. I only played it for like 4 or 5 hours, so I didn't get that deep. But
this was all in the PS3 version?
This is all in the PS3 version, which is called No More Heroes, Heroes Paradise. The only, I think, plus side I can give this port is it's got the, like, it's PlayStation Move enabled. So if you, back in the day, if you felt like playing these games with the PlayStation Move controllers, like, you could and do it motion controls, but it's also just not the recommended version.
this is why I brought you on. I didn't even know about this stuff in the PS3
port.
I did recall that it did get a PS3 port. That is so bizarre. I would imagine Suda was probably furious. At least I would understand if he was.
I would imagine he just probably wasn't pleased. Bizarre. He doesn't seem like the type to get like super mad.
Yeah, maybe he probably upset is probably a better
word. He probably just saw it and was like, why? Like, why did you do this to my game? And yeah, it's funny, even we speak of like the how risque the women are dressed. Like, if you go look at an image of the cover for the PS3, they have all the female characters standing with Travis. Yes. It's like very, yes, like, yeah.
video game developers, once in a while, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
To wrap it up, as far as this caveat, play both these games on Switch with motion controls. Mm-hmm. The end. Period. Right? That's the way I play them. I fully endorse them. I didn't really have any bugs or glitches that I can recall. The frame rate ran really, really smoothly. I mean, I don't think I even recall mentioning anything to you in terms of technical performance.
Not that I can think of.
No. Just definitely play them. So, some other caveats that I kind of want to run through really, really quickly. So in the first game, which they don't have in the second game, you have to do buy-in fees to unlock the boss battles, which involves like basically forcing you to do the side jobs. So when I talked about earlier, with really know which side jobs you're good at and can generate funds, so that way you can more quickly unlock those boss fights. And again, those aren't in No More Heroes 2. You just kind of standard progress, you know, get a boss fight and go through it and then unlock another one. So that is one thing. That's one sort of quality of life thing that I liked. I mean, you'll still, in No More Heroes 2, you'll still need to do some side jobs because to get upgrades and
upgrade your health.
Upgrade your health, et cetera, et cetera. But I did like that sort of quality of life improvement in 2, because there was a couple of times in 1 where I'm like, man, I felt like I'm borderline, had to grind a little bit. I know that G word is like toxic to to some gamers, but yeah, that is something to keep in mind. And again, if it does get grading for you in 1, just know that it isn't there in 2. I covered getting all the beam katanas. I literally had that in a note in my episode notes here before you mentioned it. Please get all the beam katanas in the first game. And again, you'll have to buy them. So, but it is worth it. When I tell you that it is worth it, it is very much worth it. That ending, it is a whole new boss fight and it's a whole ridiculous cinematic. So definitely do it. It's not just some secret sort of coy, sly.
It's not a troll.
Yeah. It's not alluding to a second game. It's not like a Marvel movie post-credit scene. It is a whole extra content, and you are rewarded for it. So definitely get all the beam katanas. We covered. There's a couple of boss lead ups in No More Heroes 2 that are annoying. I'll just use the word annoying. There's one that I really didn't like. They tried to do something with the level that really tedious for me and annoying. I think you know which one it is. I don't even want to really allude to it, but
I'll tie it into this. It's something that the second game does that you're like, oh my god, this is really awesome and exciting, and then it's a gameplay twist is what we're hinting at here, but it's a very underwhelming executed one, unfortunately, both times they do it.
It's like the setup is really cool and where they take it in terms of gameplay, I'm like, why did you do this? Why? The final caveat, which we have to address this, Sam, the both of these games, the horny. Okay. There is a overabundance of horny, and to start off with looping this back around, the motion controls, to give you a perspective, you have to recharge your blade katana for battery. And the way you recharge it is, in this case, you shake the Joy-Con up and down rapidly, very, very, very rapidly. The faster you do so, the faster the beam katana recharges. So that is one example. Two is, we alluded to, the women are all really scantily clad, both allies and bosses. I don't think there is one even relatively modestly dressed female. And in the second game, they go even further with the horny, because, oh boy, is there jiggling in the second game.
Everyone jiggles in that game, even Travis.
Yes, even Travis, but boy, how did they zoom in on the jiggling for the females? And there are, yeah, I mean the obvious, that which wouldn't surprise people, there are sort of beam katana phallic representations. And so, yeah, just know going in that there is a good deal of horny. As I said, this is very much if a teenage boy made a third person action game. And that's that. When you say teenage boys, it's all about sex and violence.
Yeah.
And so, let's, you know, this isn't necessarily negative. It's just, again, it's
one man's, it's like, yeah, one man's negative is another man's positive here.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know. You know, it's, I wouldn't call it a negative. I'm like, oh boy, this is
just,
horny.
Yeah. Definitely some people I know what you're getting at. I think it's just some people are kind of turned off by that. And I do think overall in Suda games, it's always played up for humor most of the time. It's always, because like Travis is always the butt of the joke too, which makes it even funnier.
Yeah, and we mentioned Sylvia earlier. She very much uses that sort of scantily clad sexuality to just play him like a fiddle.
Yep.
An absolute idiot. I mean, it's part of the joking premise of the first game is that part of his reward for getting number one assassin is to have sex with her. And that's what drives him the whole time. Aside from the obvious, like just wanting to be number one. I get to have sex with you. And she's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And he buys it hook, line, and sinker. And so, yeah, and it's obviously, it's played up more, even more in two. And there's other stuff with the female characters that, again, is kind of a spoiler. And there's one case with a female character. I'm like, wow, you're even going horny here too. Okay, that's...
Yeah,
what I'm talking about. Yeah, you know,
that's one of my favorite. So, I think you're talking about the first one?
No, the second
one. Oh, the second one, okay. In the first game, there's a particular boss fight that is like, it is intentionally like, I want to say there, you know, there's an underline of like sexual themes in that fight, but yeah, I won't get too much into it.
I think that, and then there's one in two as well where it's like, yeah, you know the one I'm talking about. I'm just like, oh my God. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. But
yeah, don't let that turn you away.
No, don't let it turn you off. Just know that.
Given all
that we've talked about with this game, with like I've said, it's like a teenage boy and there's a violence. It's like, of course there's going to be sex, but just know going in, like not that necessarily people are squeamish. It's probably more of just people eye rolling.
Yeah,
but just know that the horny is very much played up for humor. It's self aware. It acknowledges that it's sort of meta, like it's driving the playable character that you're playing as himself. So yeah, just know that going in without question. So. Was there anything else that you wanted to attest to? On the
I guess to like tie that into just as like a thing, what I do find gives some games certain personality charm is like that kind of stuff, depending on the context in game, gives a game a lot more almost comedic levity to it. And like gives it all. And like I said, a lot more personality. Like there's obviously a game like Dead or Alive. Yeah. Like play those games. And that's just objectification. I'm not against that either. Like if you want to, it's like if you wanted to make the male inverse version of Dead or Alive, right, where it's just dudes almost wearing nothing and sexualizing men, do that as well. Like I'm not against that either. Like I'm almost for it. Give us all options of that, and it
would be fun.
It would be very funny. Like I find it most of the time pretty funny because wow, someone spent days of their life animating this for somebody to play.
To talk about your cinephile nature, do you like a Magic Mike DLC for Dead or Alive Volleyball?
There you go. Games like Bayonetta really takes pride in it, how flamboyantly sexual it is, but not in like a objectifying way.
It's almost like a sex positive.
It's
very outwardly encouraged. Like Bayonetta herself like knows what she is doing. She's not being used as a pawn.
She's not a.
She knows.
Yeah, right? A lot of the male characters too in the Bayonetta games are like complete doofuses, and it's funny it's fun.
Yep.
But yeah, just to touch on that, that's kind of just how I view that stuff in video games that you know that would typically turn off a lot of players, but I don't really have a problem with it in most games unless you're being absolutely vile and disgusting. Not the case here.
Oh yeah, it very much fits and works within this game and within this universe. I would feel like I wasn't being fully honest and transparent with people.
Mm-hmm, of course,
without mentioning it. So, the final thing that I wanted to address with this episode is that there are additional games beyond No More Heroes 1 and 2. Right? There's obviously No More Heroes 3. There's Travis Strikes Again. Without going up too long. We're actually running up on 2 hours. Oh. It's been such an awesome conversation, but really quickly to sort of go beyond these first two games, if people really enjoy them, where would they probably go to next after two?
So play Travis Strikes Again. Do not go to three. I love Travis Strikes Again more than three. And Travis Strikes Again was probably one of the better video game surprises I've had in recent years, where it was originally a game when it was announced was a lot of people did not take kindly to its original reveal. And Suda by that point had been away for quite a while. And then he's like, oh, I'm back and I'm bringing back No More Heroes and I'm making a new game. And people are like, oh, we're finally getting that third game we always wanted. And then he's like, oh, this is Travis Strikes Again. And it's also a completely different style of gameplay too. It's not just, it's mm-hmm. not really, it's nothing like the first two games. And it's a complete 180 twist on No More Heroes. And it's also, there's a lot more to it I do not want to talk about, because there are more surprises in that game that are things I'm glad I didn't know about before going into, and I want that same experience for other people. It is without a doubt one of my favorite games I've played. I love it pretty much almost as much as the first game. I definitely have more issues with Travis Strikes Again than the first game, but despite that game's flaws, it is one of the most endearing video games and self-reflective video games I've ever played. The meta elements are really played up in that game in a way that I've never seen a video game do. And it is really, there's truly nothing like that game. And it was made by someone who clearly has a love, not for just video games itself, but indie games and just a love of the medium in general, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And it's a game I want more people to play. But the caveat is that you have to play the first two games, and you kind of, it is in it. It's a little inaccessible because you kind of have to be aware of Suda 51, because there are a lot of references and jokes in that game that will go over a lot of people's heads, because it's also a co-op game. And the person I played it with my youngest brother, and I had to basically, you know, give him the cliff notes of what was happening in that game and what all the references were, and played it without any knowledge of the series beforehand and jumped into that as your first one. That'd be a very big mistake, because you'd be absolutely lost. And as for the third game, it's more of the same as the first two games, but the open world's back, and it's a lot of fun. I like three more than two. I think it's a really good sequel. It's definitely rough around the edges. You can tell that game was made for a budget, and I know that's been something that's been discussed about with people for quite a while since the game released, is about the game's like actual, the money that was put into it and stuff, but I think it's a really good game. It's weirdly like a funny, also kind of a good send-off. Suda doesn't own the IP. He said like three is the end, but he said 10 years from now, if he feels like making a fourth one, he'll hit up Marvelous and they'll be perfectly okay with giving him the IP to make another one. And I'm glad Suda came back and he made two of these games back to back, and now going forward he's making new stuff again, because these games just showed to me that he has a lot more to say still. He's not done yet. And he's in his mid-50s now. He's got that energy back to make new and exciting IP again.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. I think we all have that in our own lives where we get specific motivations in different times. And in terms of a creative, I would imagine it's impossible to be really creatively stimulated or inspired 100% of the time. So for having played the first two games, I think the plan is for us to co-op.
Yeah, there's a way we can co-op it online through share. Okay. Share play, and I hope the latency shouldn't be that bad, but I heard I got it working with a friend, so it does work. It's just a matter of stable connection and getting through the whole game together. Another thing, you can play Travis Strikes Again by yourself perfectly fine, but if you do want like a really fun throwback to couch co-op, definitely do it co-op if you can. You can play it on Switch. It is on Steam as well. There's nothing wrong with that port, apparently. And I played Travis Strikes Again on PS4, so there was no issues there. And for three has performance issues on Switch, but if you want that motion control experience again, go with that. But if you want better, smoother performance, play the PS4 version on PlayStation or Xbox, I guess. It's on Xbox as well, but
I think I got both for PS4. I know I got the three, the special edition or whatever.
Yeah, the day one edition.
Mm-hmm. Really good price. And I'll have to double check on three, but yeah, I recall the plan was for us to co-op both of those.
Travis Strikes Again, the third game, is solo.
Oh, is it solo?
Yeah. The third game's that game is more in line with the first two. The Travis Strikes Again is almost like a 2.5 spin-off of sorts.
Yeah, that's really cool that we can talk about two great games and then also if people like them, we can, you know, there's others to recommend, and who knows, maybe there'll be maybe one or two more in the future. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this has been amazing. We're coming up right on 2 hours, which is exciting. I think it's a testament to Suda and No More Heroes that we're able to talk this much about him and the
without
and
even
the games.
Spoiling.
Yeah, games. Without even spoiling. Yeah, we haven't even hinted at anything. Yeah. I mean, there's bosses in the game, spoiler, but we haven't really hinted at anything. I'm really happy about that. So it's been a joy to talk as always. And you'll have to give me, I do this with every guest, but you'll have to, after we're done recording, you'll have to give me a few other games that you think are underappreciated because,
I will.
You know, I want to try to, people's tastes aren't limited to, you know, one certain type of game or series or genre, mm-hmm. or what have you. So yeah, I did it for Sean and for Cole. So I definitely want to get some other games, and I'm sure there's some that I've already played and, you know, consider doing in the future. But yeah, you know, I mean, my tastes are pretty widely varied, so I'm always down to play.
I for sure will. I give you lots of movie recommendations already, and you know, there's obviously games as well.
yeah, I the same with movies. I try to keep a really, really open mind as to play. And like I said with this episode, I would have never thought I've played games like this before and really, really enjoy them. So. Yeah, that's really what this podcast is all about, right? So definitely looking to do more episodes with the future and obviously have repeat guests. But in the meantime, thank you, Sam, for nearly 2 hours. I have I have long since run out of water. I have no more water left.
So same here, actually.
yeah, I'm getting a little bit hungry, too. So I'm going to get something to eat and do some laundry. Thank you to everyone listening, and we will see you next time.